Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, folks. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us again. I'm Doug Llewellyn, and it's a pleasure today. We're going to welcome Susan Marshall back to our microphone. She was here last week in a great conversation with Jim Marshall, and I think it's great that she is back again. So let me just point out, it's a pleasure to have her. For those of you who did not hear that, I want to point out that she is an executive leadership advisor. I love that title. Most leadership people call them leadership coaches. She is a leadership advisor, and her goal is to assist you to navigate challenges, to help you better understand your strengths and weaknesses, and identify strategies and deliver exceptional results. You know, I just realized I said something, and it's been bugging me in my head. Our guest is Susan Marshall. I said she had a conversation with Jim Marshall last week. It's Jim Masters, not Jim Marshall, so I apologize. I've never done that before. Wow, unbelievable. Anyway, let me just point out that in her business career and her business practice, she has three elements that she points out embody her work. And she talked about that a lot last week: competence, confidence, and risk-taking. And she says what she needs to do in order to build her confidence, which in turn elevates my confidence and enables me to take the intelligent, purposeful risk. She does that with her clients. And before she launched her own company, she was honing her skills in the corporate setting. She led a turnaround of a private marketing firm in the mid-1990s, which was the practical culmination of many, many years of learning. And that's when she started her own company. She became instrumental in helping clients learn strategic and marketing planning and professional development, consistently utilizing her three master elements. And again, it's the common thread through all of her work was leadership growth. And perhaps in an ironic twist of fate, that work fortified her for a more personally grueling chapter of assisting her parents through their battles with Alzheimer's disease and with dementia. And she'll talk about that. She's a highly regarded speaker. She's the founder of the Backbone Institute, working with high-performance leaders in the public and private sector, nonprofit agencies, and public education, which we were talking about. But she is also the acclaimed author of a number of books. Four books: Mom's Gone Missing, When a Parent's Changing Life Upends Yours, How to Grow a Backbone, 10 Strategies for Gaining Power and Influence at Work, of Beauty and Substance, and A Backbone Guide for Women and Life, Be In It. There are four different books there. We're going to talk with Susan about those and about her career very briefly, but we want to get the books today. And anyway, Susan, very welcome. Nice to have you back with us today. Can't believe I said Jim Marshall. How about that? How are you?
It's funny. Well, I heard it when you said it, and I'm like, huh, I didn't know that Jim and I were related. Good morning. It is an absolute honor to chat with you today. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, thank you so much. I also want to point out that I was looking for your website, and I didn't put the A in Susan Marshall, and it makes a big difference.
Okay.
You know that?
So,
Susan A. Marshall is your website, and it's a great
Susan
website,
SusanAMarshall.com, yes. So Doug, yes. I'm curious, yes. When you missed the A and you tried to find the website and couldn't, what was your first reaction?
Well, I didn't know that you were a real estate broker in San Diego.
That's funny.
That's
nor did
the
I. It's happened
Marshall
before.
Is, right?
Yeah. Well, and there apparently is an actress and a musician. I'm like, oh, those are my alter egos. No.
Well, my goodness.
It's funny what we find.
Isn't that the truth? Well, anyway, let me ask you very briefly. Let's recap for folks who didn't hear anything about your conversation last week. I like the way you put it that you're a leadership advisor. Why do you use that term advisor rather than coach?
Well, a number of reasons, and we're going to dive deep into Susan A. Marshall's psyche right now. Actually, I grew up tomboy, three brothers, and I loved football. And I thought, you know what? I have thought this many, 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 many times over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. It's a good thing that we didn't have gender options. And I say this with all sincerity. I wanted to be a boy because I wanted to play football. I didn't care what it would take. I was climbing trees and pitching baseballs and playing football. I was a heck of a quarterback in our football, street football. So anyway, that's where, you know, this whole notion of coach started for me. And so when the coaching industry, the executive coaching industry grew up, I kept saying to myself, no. If you are a coach, you're like John Madden. You're pacing the sidelines. You're yelling at people. Or if you're like Vince Lombardi, you're going, what the is going on out there? Don't call this coaches. So I grew up in corporate, as you said, and I watched a lot of people grow up. Maybe as one of my favorite Delta pilots told me years ago, don't mistake this, Susan. We grow big, but we don't grow up. And I saw a lot of that. And yet I also at the same time saw people who really wanted to have positions of influence, and they wanted to have decision-making authority, not necessarily the responsibility, but the authority, because leadership's cool, right? And so I watched. I'm an observer of people. I'm the second of six kids, so I've always been around people behaving in various ways. And I always wondered, why is this person really good at doing these things and getting others to do some things? Tom Sawyer, right? Paint the fence. And why are some other people just, they sound great, they look great, and it's like this resounding kettle. There's nothing there. And so I was fascinated by that, and that's where kind of the competence, confidence, and risk-taking came from, was that observation. And as I began working with people who had these aspirations but had no consequent or corresponding confidence to go do that, we'd talk for a long time about why is that and what is that. And it became crystal clear to me, Doug, that many of these people had no idea how to get from point A where they were with this tremendous aspiration, intellect, and perhaps energy, but no confidence to get to point B. And so initially the work began, how do we help people build confidence? And it became very clear to me again, this is not my work, folks. This is your work. I can facilitate it. I can challenge you with questions. I can respect silence when you need to process and do your work. That's not coaching. It is. Of course it is. But in my head, that word just never made sense to me. So it really truly was about helping people. I became a practitioner of this work. And it really is a facilitation of thought. It is a reflection back. I said to Jim last week, I'm a mirror for people. They say something, I reflect it back. If they respond negatively to the reflection, either I've gotten it wrong, I heard something different from what they said, which is an important checkpoint, and or what reflects back is not what they want. So it's powerful work. It's a ton of fun. It's messy. Growth is hard, as we all know, so a lot of people get very upset with me. I'm okay with that. This isn't about me. It's about helping you grow to a level of aspiration you told me you wanted. If that changes along the way, that's okay. It's good. So the more we begin to understand ourselves, how we're put together, that's important. And then we put self in context. What circumstances am I in now? And as we know, every time we walk from room to room or from home to a meeting to driving someplace, the context changes constantly. If I expect me to be exactly the same in context B as I was in context A, I'm probably going to be in a little trouble, and people get frozen in that sort of idea construct in their head.
Wow. That's really interesting. Do you still do a lot of that? I know you're so active as an author. I'm just wondering, you have your business, you know, the Backbone Institute. Who do you work with primarily? I mean, are they business executives who come to you?
They are, or companies who want team, you know, team growth. And the whole team dynamics thing is very fascinating to me as well. But as we know from being in teams and observing, there always is a leader. The alpha person in a team may not be the best person to lead the effort. So right. working through that dynamic, and again, it's like we all have our self-concept. It might not work in certain situations. Let's acknowledge that and learn. I like to talk about building a suite of actions and behaviors that we can select from that suite of things we have, those capabilities, and apply them to the circumstance.
Interesting. Well, look, you talked at length about that aspect of your life last week with
yes.
Tim. I want to focus mm-hmm. on your life as an author. And I'm just wondering, you have written a pretty fascinating book called Mom's Gone Missing, and something, you know, I think people could almost automatically grasp, maybe in the beginning, what that really means, but it deals with the fact that your mother had dementia.
Yep.
Your father had dementia.
Yep.
So anyway, I want to get into that, but let me ask you first, did you ever, in your wildest dreams, think you would write a book in your career?
I did, actually, and it had nothing to do with career. It had everything to do with love of my grandfather. He was a blue-collar guy, worked at Alice Chalmers in West Allis, Wisconsin. And when we were visiting Grandma, we lived in West Bend at the time, which was about 30 miles north. When we would visit Grandma, we'd walk from her home to Alice Chalmers, and we'd walk back home with my grandfather. And do you remember the kids' game, don't step on the crack or you'll break your
oh,
mother's
of course.
Back? Yeah, well, yes. I would step yes. on cracks purposely because I didn't like Mom. So I was the wicked child, right? But I loved my grandfather. He was straightforward. He had a parakeet, Pete, who would play solitaire. Pete, turn that card. The parakeet would turn the card. Fascinating. Anyway, I was probably 14 or 15, and I said, Grandpa, someday I'm going to write a book. And I'm thinking, I didn't know Danielle Steele at the time, but that's what I had in mind. I'm going to, you know, someday I'm going to live on a beach, I'm going to drink mimosas, and I'm going to write. Well,
great.
Never,
yeah.
ever
Absolutely.
Did I expect I would write business books, but... And I don't really know what motivated me to get started, but I started for years. The industry was such that you would write a proposal, you would send it out with a query letter to one agent at a time. I thought I needed an agent. Well, that painful process over a number of years led me to the How to Grow a Backbone book. It was a title in my head. And an agent in New York called me and said, we're fascinated by this. My publicist loves the title. What's it about? I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
So it was very funny. Anyway,
okay.
that one came out in 2000, so 22 years ago. Holy smokes. And it was really a difficult, the proposal writing was difficult because essentially it was a research paper on what this book not only would cover, but what other books were like it in the market. I detested that process. But it was very, very helpful in terms of finally writing the final book. And then it went out to an editor, and there were so few corrections when it came back. I thought, did this person even read it?
There you go.
So nonetheless, wow. that came out. And actually, as that was published, I was getting divorced, and not for the first time. So the notion of me going out as an expert talking about this when I was my personal life was a complete mess really didn't sit well with me, so I wrote it. It went out there, and it was kind of like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. As you and I both know, if you're not out there talking about it, it goes nowhere.
Right.
So that was that, and then at the time I wrote that book, we had put together a list of backbone guides that would make sense, a backbone guide for geeks, for nonprofit leaders, for parents, for educators, and for women. And those market segments came from work that I had been doing with other organizations and industries. Well, so 10 years after How to Grow a Backbone came out, I thought, you know, I need to get another book in the market just to have presence before I start releasing these backbone guides. And my thought was one every 2 or 3 years, right? This is what we do. Well, my writing is really a hobby, or had been.
Mm-hmm.
So life being it, was published in 2012 and is actually a compilation of 20-plus years of writing short pieces for various publications, Wisconsin Woman Magazine, the Business Journal, or Biz Times, I guess it was, various newspapers. And it was, you know, it's advice pieces and kind of musing about the weirdness of life, that kind of stuff. So that came out in 2012. In 2014, we published A Beauty and Substance, A Backbone Guide for Women. And then life changed on January 4th, 2016, which is how Moms Gone Missing starts. I actually got a phone call from a brother in Colorado. Mom's gone missing, find her, 7:30 in the morning. What? He was calling in Colorado. I answered my phone in Wisconsin, Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. And Mom lived in Arizona.
Yeah.
What is happening here? So that opened about a two-year chapter of helping First Dad with about a 10 or 12-year journey for Alzheimer's. We're not quite sure how long he suffered with it. And then Mom's rapid, surprising, shocking decline and departure 10 months later.
It's interesting that both of your parents went missing.
Yeah.
But you named the book after Mom's gone. You could have done it after Dad's gone missing as well, couldn't you? Probably.
Yeah, except that Dad was really fading. You know, this Alzheimer's journey is really confusing. The illness itself is so difficult.
Yeah.
To understand, first of all, there's a lot of research happening. I'll talk about that a little bit. But we don't, the brain is enclosed. It's encased in this, you know, this bone structure. We can't see what's happening. We can now, certainly in ways that we didn't years ago. But the behavior changes sometimes are so subtle. And the creep of the illness is so insidious, we don't really see it. Denial is the primary reaction to the onset of something like this. Oh, he's just getting older. So Dad, you know, Dad faded, certainly, but Mom literally went missing. There was a silver alert issued for her. She was lost. And that's why I say I got a call from my brother in Colorado.
Oh.
I answered it in Wisconsin. Mom's in Arizona. What the? Yeah.
Where was she? Where did they find her?
They found her 2.5 hours away in Tucson, Arizona. We have no idea what happened, where she started from, where she thought she was driving to. And it's a blessing, Doug. I had a brother, another brother in Colorado, who had the habit of calling Mom every Sunday night.
Yeah.
So he called her that Sunday evening. It was 9 o'clock Arizona time. She was driving. And she said, you know what, I'm driving the car. I don't want to talk to you now. Call me later. 2 hours later, at 11 p.m. Arizona time, he called her. She's still driving. He said, Mom, put your phone down on the seat. Don't close it. She had a flip phone. Put your phone on the seat. Find a road sign. I'll help you back. I'll talk you back to your home. She put the phone on the car seat. The battery died.
Oh.
That's how we knew she was even anywhere but home. So it was fascinating, that whole thing, and then the process of finding her. The silver alert was issued. Of course, her friends and neighbors have no idea what's happened. I'm calling them to ask what they know about it. And, of course, I'm saying I'm her daughter. The skepticism elder people have for anyone calling them about a situation they're already upset about is palpable. You're her daughter, and you don't know what's happening? No, I'm in Wisconsin. So I learned a whole bunch of stuff, some of which I captured in the book.
Well, let me ask you about the book.
Give
me an explanation of who the book really is for. I know, it's got a great description. It includes such things as sibling tensions, a bewildering array of health care, financial and legal decisions that you had to make, reconciliation of lifelong hurts, and the emotional tsunami that surges through it all. Obviously, this is the story of what you went through with your mom. Is this kind of a guide for other people who are about to experience what you did, do you think? What would you say?
It can be, yes. But what I have learned from the reaction that I've gotten from people who have read the book, it is more an assurance that all of the crazy feelings you have, from anger and resentment to complete bewilderment, deep feelings of inadequacy, all of that is normal. So people are finding it very reassuring because that's what they're living. So the book is for anyone who is in the midst of caregiving, someone with Alzheimer's or dementia, who is anticipating it, or perhaps who lived it and have not processed their own emotion surrounding all of it. It's a very, like I said, it's a very bewildering time. What in the world is going on here? I don't know what to do. I don't know how fast to do it. If I do something, I don't know if it was right or wrong. I think that's caregiving, you know, in essence anyway. But with an Alzheimer's and dementia loved one, it gets even more confusing because you're reliving your past. Yeah. Right? This is parent-child.
How did you handle the situation with your mother, you know, going through this dramatic decline in her abilities, mental abilities, with you being where you are in Wisconsin and she was in Arizona? Of course, she had a son in Arizona, right? Not far.
I had a sister in Arizona, but yeah, no, she was really uninvolved for the most part. So I packed her up, moved her from Arizona to a memory care facility that's 5 minutes from my house in Oconomowoc. So just making that decision, trying to look for a facility, we had no idea where Mom was on the cognitive scale. Dad's journey had taken so very long. Mom was still golfing, she was still bowling, she was still doing popcorn night with neighbors. Now, much less engaged than she had been, and I talked with a number of her friends who told me she still drives her golf cart to the golf course, but she gets lost. Oh, dear, that can't be a good thing. So we didn't know quite where she was, but we knew she couldn't live alone anymore. And I write about a couple of nurses who came in. One I named Nurse Ratchet, over one flew over the cuckoo's nest. One I named Nurse Natter because she would not stop talking. So there's humor in the book, but it was really a journey that was so rapid. It was hard to collect my thoughts day to day. And again, this feeling of abject inadequacy was constant.
Talk to me about the sibling tensions aspect of what you went through.
Well, everybody had an opinion. I was the one talking with doctors and nurses and getting medical records and, you know, looking for facilities. But they all had very specific and forceful opinions about how Mom was. In fact, one of my siblings said, you know what, I know her better than her doctor does. I've lived with her my whole life. Okay. So it was just, I was constantly barraged with advice, with how come you did this, how come you didn't do that. So that, and I have five of them. So first, as this started to unfold, I was spending hours and hours and hours on the phone with each one of them. I said, guys, I can't do this. Let's put together a family call. So one of my brothers did that, thank God. But several siblings really just don't have much time for each other. So those became bicker sessions or, you know, competitions for who could talk most and sound smartest. So I think we did two of those, and that was that. So there's all of that family stuff. What I realized throughout all of this is they were processing grief and loss from a distance without being able to be engaged, without seeing Mom day to day or understanding how she was. So the insidious creep of the disease coincides with this incremental loss. We lose these people every day in little ways, and they're still here. There's no closure. There's no opportunity to put it to rest. Now, when Mom passed, we got together, obviously, for services and those kinds of things, and I began to look around and listen to my siblings and other family members and realizing some of these people are stuck in the 70s. So I don't know what their relationships were like with Mom and Dad, nor did they know mine. So, and I think I wrote in the foreword, Doug, there's a risk in writing about something like this when you have family members who saw it very differently, who experienced it very differently. So there was tension around all of that, and how do you keep your wits not terribly well at times, and certainly not very gracefully at times. It's okay.
What do you mean when you say they were stuck in the 70s? What are you know... Yeah, what's your point
that
there?
That Mom and Dad had not, in fact, aged and passed, that how we experienced one another as children is how we still are. So I was always known as the peacekeeper in the family, so I really didn't have the wherewithal to make tough decisions because I just wanted everybody to be happy. And I thought, wow, you guys don't know me very well. So that kind of thing.
Well, it sounds like an amazing story of what you had to go through, and I can't imagine all the issues of health care that you had to. I mean, that you talk about bewildering array of health care, financial and legal decisions. Talk briefly about that, because that everybody can understand, I do believe.
Yeah. Oh. Well, it started with trying to find a facility for Mom. I knew she couldn't live with me. I don't have the resources. I don't have the time. None of my other siblings had the kind of caregiving resources, I guess is the best way to say that, to have her live with one of us. And so is it assisted living? Is it independent living to assisted, to full nursing, to memory care? Is it memory care exclusively? So the choices are, I mean, incredible, right?
Yes.
We walked into a number of places that smelled like a hospital, and we turned around and walked out. My sister and I went together to do a bunch of this work. It's kind of like, nope, this isn't it. So just understanding, first of all, where mom was, as I said, on this cognitive scale, we didn't know. We didn't know what would make her happy. We didn't know what she was able to do and what would be a danger to her if she tried cooking, for example. So, and then the power of attorney, bringing in the legal field, some facilities insisted that the power of attorney be exercised, meaning I would make decisions for mom. She would not sign any paperwork for herself. Other facilities said, no, do not exercise the power of attorney because that's not a requirement we have. Well, so just keeping all that kind of straight, and then they had, mom and dad had put together a big fat binder, estate planning back in 1997 in Arizona. That came to me, took some time finding it, but Arizona law and Wisconsin law don't match. Laws in 1997 really didn't have a lot of applicability. They had some applicability to 2016, but there were changes. So I had to take it to an attorney. I had to work through all of that. Attorneys do not look kindly on children because it's like an automatic assumption is we're going to do whatever we can to rip off mom and dad. So just all of that was really interesting to me to experience and to manage my own emotion and reaction to those things. So that's the stuff I write about.
That's the kind of thing you're talking about because it comes out in the title, Mom's Gone Missing, When a Parent's Changing Life Upends Yours. Yours really got
totally
upended for quite a period of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So back to work for 2 years, and I wrote about this toward the end, for 2 years after mom passed, I had no idea what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. They were gone. I'm like, and then, you know, shortly on the heels of that came the pandemic, so nobody was going anywhere. It really is an upending process, and how you come back and put your feet, you know, firmly on the earth takes time.
Well, it sounds like a very, very interesting book to read. Again, the title of this book, there are four books in all, but this one is, again, the title is Mom's Gone Missing, When a Parent's Changing Life Upends Yours. Where is the book available, Susan? Amazon?
SusanAMarshall.com. Make sure you include the A, but also
okay.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the online bookstores
will
have
stores.
It.
Oh, well, good. And did you find it, we don't have enough time to explore the whole thing, but was it fairly easy to get this one published, or was it a pain in the neck as well?
No, it was. In fact, I have a publisher here. She has become a friend over the years, and she kept saying to me as I was living this, Susan, you need to write this book, you need to write this book. I kept saying, Kira, I don't know who I'm writing to. I don't know what I'm saying. So it took 2 years after mom passed, and I finally realized, you know what, maybe the best thing I can do is simply tell the story as candidly, as respectfully as I can. So that's what I did.
Oh, good for you. And the reaction? What kind of reaction do you
get? Powerful reaction. People call me in tears or write to me. I was doing, you know, kind of the online book club things. One of the first ones we did a year and a half or so ago, there was a gentleman, and he was probably
Susan,
in his early
60s. I hate to interrupt you. I know it got great reaction. The clock is telling me I got to hurry up, and I want to get this in before we go. We're talking to Susan A. Marshall. Her website, and the book is available there, is at www, of course, SusanAMarshall.com. If you go there, you can find out all about the four books that Susan has written and her career and what she does as a a leadership advisor, you know. It's amazing. You're a wonderful, gifted lady to talk to, and I wish we had more time, Susan, but I got to go. So thank you so much,
Doug. I appreciate it.
Okay. All righty. That's it for today, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this. What a wonderful lady to talk to. Bye.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Yes, we do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. I'll see you next time, everybody. Till then, take care and be safe. Bye.